You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome to 90 Days Soulmate with Lisette.
And Jim.
Tonight, what are we talking about? We're talking about something.
Something, emotion.
Emotions. Emotions are temporary, or are they? What do you think?
Both. Yeah.
So, yeah, we were thinking about that. We were talking about that. We have a little bit to say on a lot of things, or a lot to say on a lot of things. You want to start?
Yes, right. I'm ready. Let's go.
So, let's go back to our little presentation here. We have a little bit of interactive PowerPoint going. So, number one, the difference between drives and emotions, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about the drives that keep us moving, part of them being, say, our sex drive, the others being, like, hunger. Emotions come and go. We do have a certain state. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit. So emotions come and go, but there might be like a general feeling, like how you feel generally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not impacted one way or the other really strongly, I always think I'm neutral. I just keep doing stuff. And maybe it's the approach to when you see people, because a lot of emotions are triggered by interaction and situations. So when you see somebody, are you smiling? What do you see? Like usually when you see somebody, you smile, right?
Yeah, do that.
So that is natural, but are we happy when we see them? Or are we just, and I guess part of it is maybe we are.
Mm-hmm.
Are we social creatures?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing? Good.
Most people, so every half percent, I guess the high percent is social, and the small percent is not social.
As we say, there's always general. Generally speaking, most of us are social, because again, if you look at a species survival, we survived as a species because we get along with each other. Generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's in small groups, we get along with each other in small groups. But when we get into giant large groups, we start splitting up into smaller groups that get along with each other. So I want to go back to the drives aspect.
Mm-hmm.
In the definition of drives, these are things that persist no matter what the situation is. It's like every day we're hungry. And the outcome of eating is we live another day.
Yeah.
Just like drinking when we're thirsty or sleeping when we're tired.
Your natural body requests.
Right. But being angry all the time, is that a drive? Oh, some people are driven by their emotions. Like, oh, I'm angry, so I'm going to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to keep that up every day.
Yeah.
Emotions are supposedly easy to control. Do you believe that?
It's easy?
Yeah. Emotions are, let me try it a different way. Drives are difficult to control. Like if you're hungry, you can't say, oh, okay, I'm not going to think about being hungry. I'm not hungry anymore. No?
Yeah, yeah. It also depends on how you control your brain, but in general, it's difficult to say, oh, I think you're not hungry. No, you are hungry.
If you're hungry every day, it's hard to say, I'm not hungry anymore. But if you're angry or sad or happy, you can sometimes think, it's a reaction a lot of times to situations, so you can control that. It's easier to control that. It doesn't mean you can. At certain times, you may be so emotionally distraught, or you listen to a comedian and they're so funny you just can't stop laughing. And I don't know, is laughter happy, or is it another thing?
You can laugh, maybe you cry the same time.
Laughing, crying. It's so funny. So, most of the time, though, emotions, and I guess laughter is not really happy. You can be happy that you laughed because it was funny, as compared to something bad happened. And maybe sometimes people have a laughter, nervous laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's funny.
Yeah.
But again, emotions are linked to facial expression. And I think we talk about this next, which is Dr. Ekman, who studied the universal facial expressions of emotions, that emotions were tied to distinct facial expressions across the globe in all cultures. There were 7 universal basic human facial expressions. There still are. They still exist. Happy, sad, angry, contempt, disgust, surprise, and fear.
Yeah.
So these are used all the time in movies and actors and actresses, and we use them all the time typically not in control. They're typically responses linked directly to our emotion. And a lot of these are, again, linked to evolution. What allowed people to survive? So the smile, that when people smiled at each other, typically it was they were showing friendliness, that they weren't going to attack you, where angriness, you know, if someone was angry, you'd want to stay away from them because maybe that's what's going to happen. Surprise. You know, these things, these are natural. And not only are they natural facial expressions to these emotions, but they actually change the chemistry of the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? As is the proof.
You were talking about that just earlier today. I don't know if you want to repeat that, but like you're really scared what can happen.
Yeah, your body starts to flush in your system.
Flush.
Yeah.
You can lose your vowels. You can,
you know, pee yourself. So,
yep.
And this is the
so
way
scared.
That your body needs to be light to run.
Don't waste energy on digesting.
Holding a lot of heavy in your body. Yes, that's a natural reaction. So you see some people that maybe pee and they want a critical situation. Is natural flushing system. Others do more the pee.
Yeah,
number two.
And I think, you know, it's interesting. Like, for some people, like when I would run in a race, I'd have to use the restroom a lot beforehand because I'd get nervous. And it wasn't really, I don't think that would be happy, sad, angry, contempt, fear. Maybe fear of the pain, the pain that you're going to have while running and the adrenaline that you start getting just kind of flushes you out. So that's the adrenaline acting. But why this is important is the emotions that we're talking about today is how do emotions impact not only how we think, how we feel, but how we act, and is
that
it something...
the key point, how we act.
How we act, and can we change how we act? So let's take a look at this. This I find interesting. I like the word interesting. Not unusual, but let's go through these. The upper left hand of this picture, that's representing, I believe, what do you think, happy?
Well, the first one?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I do have something funny to say about this at the end. The second one, which is top middle, sad. The top right there, That's kind of like contempt. Like contempt is where you just dislike a person. You dislike what they do. You don't think what they do is any good. You're just like, I don't like them. It's like, who cares about them? The bottom left, that's definitely fear. Fear, scared. Bottom center.
Surprise.
You want to go all the way on the right? So we're looking all the way on the right now. Surprise, of course. And no, you can't. You can't do that. I don't think we have a mouse. Here, I use my laser pointer. The bottom center is disgust. And these are the muscle movement in the face, again, universal across cultures, across ethnicities, what is it called? Countries of origin, everywhere. And the last one on the bottom, anger. Down there, anger. That would show you're mad. And again, these are not only facial expressions that are tied to emotion, but these facial expressions are connected to how you feel and overall what your body's doing during this time to prepare it for what is necessary for survival based upon what these mean. If you're fearful, things change in your body in order to have the best chance of survival.
Yeah.
If you're angry, same thing. It's like anger causes people to do stuff that they wouldn't do if they're not angry. And again, it wouldn't be an emotion. It wouldn't be something we feel naturally if it didn't have something to do with survival.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing all that, is these emotions that we carry around with us are contagious. It's like emotions 19.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we can share our emotions with others. So if I come in and I see you and I'm like, oh, hey, listen, how are you? And you see me so happy and you're like, happy. But if I come in happy and something happened to you and you're all sad, I can become sad. Like if you're really impacted by something sad, I see you sad and I get sad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? So the point of emotions being contagious, there's a reason we bring this up. One is our behaviors are mimicked. We can mimic others very easily. Humans and human survival happened because we are able to copy each other. We can copy how to plant something, how to pick something, how to chase an animal, we can learn how to do things by watching others. That's important. Because of that, these behaviors that are part of us and innate, the behavior, the feelings, the emotions that are part of us, people see us smile, they smile, and the smile itself triggers an emotional response. So the emotion can trigger the behavior or the facial expression, but the facial expression can trigger the emotion. And that's one of the things that helps us transfer this emotion from one person to the other. In the field of psychology,
mm-hmm.
emotional intelligence is being able to recognize the emotion of a situation, being able to see how you're able to impact others in that situation, creating a different emotional structure around that situation to create a better outcome for those involved in whatever that situation is. So again, emotional intelligence is managing our own emotions so we can then display our own emotion in the facial expressions we use, the words we use, the actions we do to create a better outcome.
And also that the body language is impact more the word that you use.
It is true.
Yeah, so maybe you can talk a lot of stuff, but obviously if you not coordinate with your emotion, face, and movement, the people don't feel the messages not go through.
So I forget the exact number, but I believe it's over 60% is body language.
Yeah.
Another near 30% is tone of voice.
Yeah, but of the being and like, huge is your body language.
The body language is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Tone of voice is huge. The actual words you use, less so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you say, I'm really sorry,
mm-hmm.
or you explain yourself for how sorry you are, it may not make much of a difference in the message because it's the body language and the tone of voice that the actual words. So in communicating with people, the necessary things are to show the physicality, body language of whatever that emotion is and the tone of voice.
Mm-hmm.
That conveys the message more so than the words because the words are going to be misinterpreted anyway.
More if you have accent like me.
Are you angry at me again? We're just kidding. But we'll be back, I think, in a little bit with more of 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Right after this. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about emotions. One, are emotions really prevalent all the time?
Mm-hmm.
To me, again, I kind of float in this. I just do stuff. Like, you just do stuff daily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think, do I feel happy? Do I feel sad? A lot of times, I feel, mm-hmm. particularly, that emotions don't play much of a role in anything until an emotion hits, like, something bothers you, someone cuts you off in traffic and you're angry. Or you get to work, you see somebody, you smile and you're happy. Or you're working on a team and they just win a big order and everyone congratulates each other and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But until that happens, I feel like I'm neither sad nor happy nor angry. I'm just in this general state. Is that true? Is that like most people, they just do stuff? Or do you think there's like a little underlying area of where you're floating?
Yeah, because it depends how your mind is process your thought and how this thought make how you acting. So it's some kind of cycle, you know? So I can explain my own process when I feel like that yesterday when I have to fly, and then the app show your flight is delayed, so I have connection. I cannot fly, and I go home from today here. So, and I say I have power to change the weather or change the status of the flight. No, so I don't have to be angry or scared or worried. So you know what? Maybe I have time to reading a book and sitting somewhere or finish my work and be relaxing, because it's when I decide something that I cannot have action. So this is my own process to be relaxing versus stress.
So to me, it's almost what you were loaded up to be or geared up to be, that when this situation arises, you choose to be, it's okay. Not angry, where someone else might be angry.
Yeah, so I have somebody next to me that she had the same fly, and she was so
angry, upset,
stressed, and walking to the airline to try to do something, and I see all effort, and then she's sitting in one line next to me.
So
in
she's
the plane.
Next to you anyway.
Yeah.
Which then leads me to believe is maybe the other person is more easily angered, and maybe they feel like they're angry, like during the day, but maybe they come from a perspective of anger, because maybe that's what they feel that has helped them along.
Yeah.
They've been trained to be angry. So let's talk about how...
Sure.
This one? You want to talk about this? We can talk about this. We can get back to the other. We will get back to the other.
Yeah, you're not sharing any.
I will. No, I'm sharing this. We shared the other already,
okay.
So we're going to share this. So emotions affect reasoning. So going back to Lizette being, what the heck, I have to deal with this, I'm going to make a decision, I'm going to just deal with whatever it is, I can't change anything, I'm just going to deal with it, where the other person got angry, the thought of your available options, I think, were much greater, and I'll talk about the rest of what's on there in a minute. The view you took about the situation allowed you to think about the options you had, whereas somebody who might have been really angry about it might have made a rash decision on, I need to get on another plane now because I'm so angry.
Yeah.
And then ended up in a different airport and stuck overnight.
And pay more money.
And pay more money.
Yeah.
Because you're making a rash emotional decision.
Yeah.
Which maybe we should stop, we talked about that emotions can be managed.
Mm-hmm.
Use some emotional intelligence for the situation. See what you should be thinking and how to look at this in a more neutral way to have a better outcome. So going back to the slide, one of the studies that we researched talks about participants who were given a intelligence test, but it's considered a manipulated intelligence test, because at the end of the intelligence test, they were told that they did really well, it was really positive, they did a really good job on it, or, wow, you really failed that test, or, yeah, it was okay. So they were given positive, negative, or neutral feedback. Then they were given an additional logical reasoning set of problems, logical inference problems, where they had to solve those problems after being put into a positive, negative, or neutral state of mind.
Okay.
Who do you think did best?
I guess the positive.
You would think, right? You would think the positive thinker, be positive thinker, positive thinker, mm-hmm. positive thinker. So the negative mood people performed worse than the positive.
Okay.
That makes sense. So there was a clear effect of the emotions on reasoning performance. Negative mood performed worse, but the neutral mood outperformed both when it came to logical reasoning, which when you have to make a decision on something, maybe it makes sense to be
neutral. Yeah.
And I'll talk about the phobia people. People who are really scared had a phobia. Like this was, one was phobia of spiders. So there were people who said, I am really scared of spiders. I freeze up, I got to jump on a table, I scream, I got to get my boyfriend in, my girlfriend in, a friend in to take care of the spider. I can't go into the room, I feel, it's awful. When those phobia people, different phobias, had questions on the logical reasoning exam that included spiders, they didn't do as well.
Yeah.
So logical reasoning that were just any question, they did just as well as others. But when it came to including tests on their phobia or questions on their phobia, they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Which we thought was, that's pretty interesting, is that anxiety phobias can create
blocking your
block of being able to think logically. So it's hard to make a good decision on something that you have a phobia about. Maybe you need somebody's advice to help you along.
Mm-hmm.
A neutral party, a neutral third party to help you. A consultant, a decision consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should become decision consultants. Call us, we'll make your decisions for you. And last was exam anxious participants. Participants who claim to be anxious about just taking exams.
Okay.
I would have thought, because I've had friends who said, I did poorly on that because I was so anxious.
And also when I teach the training for pass the test, and most people, we have a training for 5 days, so I start to train one, two, on the third day, you see who is strong. Mm-hmm. But it's sad when you see these people that you believe pass everything,
yeah,
and the test fell. And then it's because the people, you know, they have the knowledge, but it's difficult to do the test because they're scared of the test.
Which is interesting, because this study that we are referencing here said that they didn't perform any differently. Now, again, it's a generalization, one. Two, it's a generalization based upon this study, which the exam that they took or the test they took may have been insignificant. And maybe it really was, they said, oh, I'm anxious. But maybe they really weren't as anxious as someone who's getting certified that day, and they're not like just signed up for a psychological. And that's the one thing about psychology, is that people typically have to sign up, but they know it's a study.
Yeah, so you really don't have a scare because you are an investigation. But when you need to have the certificate to work and something because your boss requests that, that is critical.
Right. And if you remember years ago, like people would do studies on laboratory rats. And this toothpaste will cause cancer in laboratory rats. These cigarettes will cause cancer in laboratory rats. These potato chips will cause cancer in laboratory rats. Well, maybe the laboratory rats, no matter what you do, they get cancer. I mean, anyway, let's continue on with this. Going back to drives, different from emotions, emotions being more instantaneous responses to concurrent events and situations. Drives are survival instincts. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about this. We coined a phrase, survival of the feel good. Is that, and that had to do really with the different chemicals that are released during the mating, the courting, the attraction, period of people falling in love through lust, through attraction, and attachment theory. Is that survival of a species was based upon chemicals that made us feel good being released over time based upon those things. Passing on genes, protecting your genes, ensuring survival. This is not what we're talking about when we're talking about emotions. They're linked in a way, but not that tightly. Have you ever been in a situation? I remember when I was a kid, and it was typically, this was something, a strong memory, Christmas.
Okay.
Christmas morning, my parents would, you know, put the gifts under the tree, and they would say, okay, you can go down Christmas Day for gift giving, you know, gift opening at 8 a.m., but not at 7:59, not at 7:59:30, 8 a.m. And I remember being 4 or 5 years old with my brother, 2 years older, my sister, well, 4 years younger, so she couldn't have been, I couldn't have been four if I was on the stairs, and she was too. But I remember being on the stairs of the house, going down, waiting at the top of the stairs because we could not go down, and it was like 7:45 in the morning. And I was so anxious, and I was so like, oh, I'm like, you know, you're almost, I guess, can I use the word fearful? Like fearful that the gifts aren't going to be there because you just want, you're anxious and you want to get down there. And that 15 minutes was almost like a year. It just, the second hand was going,
tick.
Like it wasn't moving. And I remember that so strongly. Now today, 15 minutes can go by like that. You make a cup of coffee, you put in your cup, 15 minutes is gone. But yet the whole world could have been, you could have driven around the whole world.
Perception. Yeah.
So perception of time changes due to emotions. Pleasure, this was an interesting one. So let's pop this in here. Pleasure, things that we really like, actually do cause time to travel faster. So time flies when we're having fun. Is actually, studies have shown that when there are pleasurable things, our perception of time during those pleasurable things, time goes faster. So this one study took different pictures and put different pictures on the screen in front of the participants. And some of the pictures might have just been a car or a house, but then they'd have this really good-looking dessert, you know, this beautiful cheesecake with coffee, and it would just, the colors would be beautiful, and when the participants would see that picture, they would say that it was on the screen for a shorter period of time than the other pictures. So they had to judge the length of time that the pictures were on. They would judge that those really good-looking, delicious desserts were on the screen for a very short period of time.
Versus
just normal stuff that, you know, just normal stuff. The other thing was, it turned out that people who were hungry saw the stuff on the screen even a shorter period of time, and people who had just had a full meal to eat, they saw it on for a longer period of time. So it had to do with how much you wanted that dessert, how much it appealed to you, the pleasure of it. Other things, fear. Fear did the opposite. So if you've been to Great Adventure or one of those parks where you strap into a little mechanical machine and they drop you 15 stories and all, they had people, after they got off the ride, how long did that ride take you? And they'd be like, oh, it was like 15 minutes or 2 minutes. And the fall was something like 6 seconds or 3 seconds, just 3 seconds. They would always overestimate the length of time, because in that fear state, you have so many thoughts going through your mind, triggered so instantaneously that they thought it was longer,
a lot longer
in fear. So again, fear makes you think things longer. Pleasure or happiness makes you think it's short. There's the other with another study was done with a blue dot persistence, which meant participants were shown, and the movie was either a scary movie, a sad movie, or a neutral film. And after they saw that film, and it could have been just like 5 minute or 10 minute, you know, horror movie, sad movie, or a film about nothing and neutral, they were shown a blue dot on a screen. Maybe it was for 15 seconds. And the people who participated had to estimate how long the blue dot was on the screen for. Mm-hmm. Those who just came off watching the fear movie, the scary movie that made them frightened, thought the dot was on the screen a lot longer than those who saw a sad movie or a neutral movie. Mm-hmm. Again, fear extending our perception of time. And then lastly, the skydivers who took their first 14,000-foot jump out of a plane. Those skydivers who were most fearful. So they first said how fearful they were, you know, scale of 1 to 10, based on the worst fear I ever had in my life. The amount of time they thought it took for that jump was correlated very closely with how frightened they were. The more frightened they were, the longer they thought the jump was. The less frightened they were, the faster it went for them. Because I guess at some point where people actually like doing it, it's too short.
Yeah.
And when people hate doing it, it's just so long. And it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. We want things that we're happy about lasting longer, and we want things that we're fearful about being shorter.
Sure.
But these things also have to do a little bit with survival.
Yeah.
In fear, we need to make more decisions quick that maybe save us. And so we have to be really, which means we have to think the times longer, because maybe we
part of your mind has to process. Yeah.
Think and process a lot of information really quick to make the best decision in order to survive.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. And when we come back, we'll survive more on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim
right after this message. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim, because I am so fast.
She's fast because she's fearful. I'm slow because I'm so pleasurable.
No, it's backwards.
Huh? What? All right. So in any case, we wanted to talk about, are emotions temporary? And I think the premise of this, when we started this show, before this show, when we started doing the research for this show, is my thought and our discussion was emotions really don't exist except for temporary time periods when something happens. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And in researching this, we found out that there is a short-term component and a long-developed component. So there are dynamic emotion cognition, meaning there's something that happens, a feeling happens, an emotion happens, cognition, our brain thinks about it, and there's this interaction between the emotion and what we think that can contain momentary situational responses. So something that happens, we feel a certain way, and we quickly respond a certain way. These things end up creating patterns that then become part of us in that non-emotional state, meaning that emotion that drives that dynamic, strong emotion cognition response then programs us in a certain way of acting. And the second part are all those things that have developed over our lifetime turn into our traits that part are innate, part of evolutionary psychology, part of our DNA, and part that have been developed over time. And then the things that develop over time, they always are in the back of our mind. So how we perceive the world is based upon the emotional programming, our cognition. We talked about how quickly we are to react to something.
Yeah, yeah.
How you react in a situation.
Yeah, you
compared to me. So I want to go over seven principles. We'll try to get through this quick because we've got one more thing to do at the end here.
Mm-hmm.
But the seven principles, this is brought to us by a University of Delaware professor, Carol Izzard. And the seven principles they have are just, these are based upon, let's talk about emotions and how they fit. So first, feelings, they derive from evolution and neurobiological development. So our development from when we're a child and how we develop over time based upon our environment, that these feelings that we develop, the emotions we develop are based upon those things. These become key psychological components of emotions and consciousness moving forward. So they become part of our brain and how we think. And they're inherently adaptive. What does that mean, inherently adaptive?
No, you told me.
All right, what I say. So, emotions are adaptive in this way. We feel, like let's say we're a real young kid. We feel an emotion, you know, have a feeling. It makes us think a certain way. We react a certain way. Creates an action. So okay. It's a feeling, a thought, an action.
It's a cycle.
Based upon that, we get a result. Was it an effective result? If it was an effective result, we go, oh, I feel good about that. I feel better. It's for my well-being. And we then start programming ourselves this feeling, this brain thought or cognitive response, creating this action, creating this end result is good. And we start developing more of that. If we do that and it turns out to be a bad result, we may not have that emotion next time it happens, or we may not have that brain thought based upon that emotion. And so we constantly are changing a little bit and reprogramming based upon chemistry, DNA, evolution, and environment, social interaction, family interaction.
It can be that you can reprogram your thought.
You can, and the older you get, the more probably of a struggle. But if you haven't done any reprogramming, there's no time like the present, right, to start.
Yeah. And because your own challenge to reprogram your mind.
And if you're fearful about not doing it, you'll have a lot more time to do it.
That is true. Okay.
So emotion plays a central role in the evolution of our consciousness, or how we are and how we behave daily, is as our emotions change and our feeling about things in general, it plays upon our conscious mind all the time. So it influences what we're aware of, what we're not aware of, the things that bother us, the things that we're happy about, the things that don't bother us, that those feelings, like why you would see something that I don't see, or something would bother me that doesn't bother you, or something makes you angry that makes me happy, or the other way around, is that that changes how we feel in the future.
Okay.
And it changes our behavior all the time. The what we focus on in our consciousness throughout our lifespan is based upon our feeling. It motivates our behavior, and it gives us information on, like, so if we do something, our emotions about how we feel about doing it gives us information that we then decide, is this good or bad? Do I feel good about this? And then it helps build more patterns that lead to the same thing. I'm going to jump to the second page of this, is that the other thing we talk about in adaptive responses, in responding to immediate stimulation, something that happens right now, I need to react. Emotions help us have a direct connection to our neural system. When I'm fearful, the blood moves away from my extremities. Mm-hmm. I heard about this a long time ago, that way, if like I get attacked by a lion, the blood moves back to my heart. It protects my heart. It doesn't come out of my veins so much. I may survive. Whereas if I was not fearful and the blood's everywhere, I get bitten by the lion, a lot of blood comes out. So not only does fear help us in reacting faster and a motivating force to flight or fight, mm-hmm. you know, take action, but it can also take physical changes in our body that help us survive. Emotional utilization, we talk about looking effective we talked about this before. So effective emotion cognitive interactions, that things that are actually give an effective result. I got what I wanted, therefore I do more of what that behavior resulted in.
Okay.
So whatever that behavior, the behavior which is a result of an emotion and a thought, if it's a positive thing for me, then I'll do more of it. They're learned cognitive, social, and behavioral skills.
Like the bell. Cling.
Maladaptive. So you asked this earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
What is maladaptive? So for some people, they will have feelings that lead to, and maybe they have wrong feelings. Like they look at a situation wrong. They then have a thought that may be the right thought based upon that wrong feeling, and then they do something and it actually gives them a positive result, but it's antisocial, or it's not what others would do, but for them it worked. And in their family, in their situation, and you know, so say it's a big kid. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this. A big, like, you know, growing up, big kids, I always thought big kids were the ones that were more so bullies.
Okay.
Because they could do something and it would give them a result. You know, if I act tough, people are going to leave me alone. Whereas if I'm a little guy and I act tough, I'm going to get beaten up. So, you know, the big guy can act tough and avoid fights by acting tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And the little guy can get into fights by acting tough. Not that I ever did that. but if I learn a behavior as a kid, like I was picked on all the time, so I learned a behavior that did this, and I then, you know, my behavior was, kid in my class. I got picked on. So I would steal his homework so he couldn't hand it in. And then I got him kicked out of my class. I'm making this all up, by the way. But I got him kicked out of my class, so I got my reward. The bully in my class, I got kicked out by stealing his homework. Now I learn the behavior of, if I'm scared of somebody, what I do is I do something to undermine them, sabotage, get them out of there, And then I learned that behavior. And although it's effective for me in that situation, over my lifetime, if I do that again, I can go to jail. Or I can become president. One of the two.
Depending on the country, but most countries you can do that.
So, the last thing. Emotions are continually present in our minds, even if they're not as survival instincts, like meaning the fear, the sad, the scared, disgust, whatever it is. And sometimes, you know, like you talk about disgust, if disgust can make us just, you know, almost want to throw up, right? So why is that important is that if there's something that smells bad and we get disgusted by it, or we see, we do something that if we had also had like a sip of something that was bad for us, it gets out of our body, gets out of our system, yeah, so we might be able to survive. So all these emotions, again, these quick ones can help us survive. But the general emotion that floats around our brain as we move on throughout the day are continually present in the day-in-day activities of the normal mind. So I don't see it as, like, you don't recognize, like, do you recognize that you're happy?
Sometimes, but not so much.
But it's easier to recognize an extreme of an emotion.
Yeah.
That you're in this nebulous area of happy, sad, disgusted, angry, whatever it is. You're in this little area all day long, but then something impacts you and you go in one direction more so than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And you can recognize that. What the seven principles says, the seventh principle, is that these emotions that we float around with, my take on it, help us account for selective attention to stimulus. That you'll pay attention, I'll pay attention to different things based upon the emotions that we carry with us. And those emotions are tied to everything. You may feel a certain emotion for a bicycle. I may feel an emotional connection to ice cream. You may not care about ice cream. You may not care about bicycles. You know, and so based upon our emotional connection to the things we see all day long, we either have attention to them or we don't, along with situations as well. And these all influence all of our mental processes. Finally, and this is the whole point of this whole, well, kind of the whole point. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
So because emotions can be temporary feelings and emotions can flow through our minds all the time, we know that they come and go, these strong emotions. So we do have these feelings and emotions that help guide us to what we pay attention to and how we react. But then we have the strong emotions that may make us make a decision rapidly that in evolution were useful for survival. But today we're using these same emotions when we're buying a cucumber at the grocery store. We're pulling in the parking lot. That they're not for survival. They're just, mm-hmm. These emotions are running into just day-to-day living. Because of that, we have the ability to not react immediately to these emotions. That will make different decisions. The decisions of the bad decisions that we can make in emotional states. We talked about how we can answer things logically better when we're in a neutral state.
Cut down.
How time changes, which means when we're fearful, time is really slow, and when we're happy, it's fast. That if we are judging things based upon our perceptions, and our perception is very happy or very fearful, or we're positive or negative, yeah, that those emotions can create time variances. They can give us illogical conclusions. We cannot think as well. And so we should take time to make permanent decisions in order to be rational, calm, and control, especially when we can be in control of the things we can control.
Exactly.
Recognize our own emotions,
And the context of where you are.
Context of where you are, the situation, everything
the
that's going on around.
Who you are. So the,
who you're with.
Who you're with, yeah.
And you then control your emotion, your expression of emotion, what you say, your body language, mm-hmm. your tone of voice.
And the, what are you throw?
A couple of words you say.
Oh, no, say nothing.
You'll have better reactions. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Have a great week.
Bye.
Ninety Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.